Welcome to the Hall of Blue Illumination, the podcast dedicated to M.A.R. Barker's legendary world of Tecumel.
We are back in the Hall of Blue Illumination, and today, this being the fifth episode, I believe, we are going to talk about the role of language in Professor Barker's work and in Tecumel particularly. This is a topic that, as an English major in college, I probably would have been way more fascinated with if I had anyone to talk to about it. But fortunately today, many years later, I do. So today, who do we have? The regular cast of characters. Victor Raymond. And James Malaszewski. Victor, I believe you called this topic. So would you like to start us out?
Sure. You know, one of the things that happens whenever people run into Tecumel is that there's language that's right there. It's right there in the Empire of the Petal Throne game. It shows up in pretty much everything that Professor Barker did, and that's not too surprising because he was a professor of South Asian languages. That having been said, the most common complaint I have ever heard about Tecumel is, oh, I can't pronounce the words. It's so impenetrable. And I find that really weird, particularly now when there's people learning Klingon and Elvish and all these other languages that are actually not as well supported in some cases at Soyani. And so to hear people talk about, oh, it's so mysterious, and I can't make my mouth make those sounds, it's like, no, you're not trying. Now, that having been said, I don't want to be too critical, because, yeah, it's not English. It's not the sort of thing that people would expect. But if people can put their mouths and tongues around, you know, labial fricatives, I think they can put their mouths and tongues around Soyani. So, I mean, okay, that's just me. And I know I'm speaking to this from the most privileged perspective ever, that I actually gamed with Professor Barker, and he would correct our Soliani when we were playing. So, you know, we were getting active language lessons. So, yeah, I'm not the guy to really talk about this from a typical perspective. But I will say that it's something that is made out to be much harder than it actually is. I don't know.
I think that's true. I think that's true.
Yeah, James, what's your perspective on this?
My perspective. See, I was not in as privileged a position as you to have Professor Barker as my personal tutor, but I always had a great deal of interest in languages, foreign languages in particular. So I was never really intimidated by Soyani. In fact, quite the contrary, I was rather attracted to it. It's exactly the kind of thing that, you know, I was interested in. I mean, I remember as a boy reading The Lord of the Rings and paying a great deal of attention to all those appendices where they would talk about Elvish and Dwarvish and so forth. So Soyani was right up my alley. It was exactly something that I was keen to get into. But that having been said, I mean, one of the things, it sort of echoes what you said, is that Soyani's as a language is actually fairly regular. The pronunciation is not all that peculiar. There's not a lot of exceptions, and I don't know if there are any exceptions in terms of the way letters are pronounced. It's very consistent. Some of the sounds are unusual for an English speaker. And for me personally, I think the hardest thing about Soyani is not the sounds, it's the accent, the emphasis, where you place the syllable is stressed. And I know, you know, that's probably true of other people, because when I've spoken to you, Victor, and I've mentioned, you know, certain words, and then you would do the same thing that undoubtedly Professor Barker did for you and correct me. So it's, you know, Avanthar, for example, not Avanthar. It's not.
What's difficult about it, James?
Because it isn't always in the place where, as an English speaker, you would think it would go. You know, for example, as I said, it's Avanthar. I know the accent is over that last A, but still, I want to say Avanthar, right? I want to put it on that penultimate syllable there rather than the final one, just for an example. It's just when you look at a word as an English speaker, and I assume this is true of speakers of other languages, you know, languages have a certain kind of a rhythm to them and an expectation of this is how a word will be pronounced just when you look at it. That isn't always true, obviously, even in English, but you look at a Sulyani word, at least I do, and I think, oh, it's pronounced like this, but it isn't always. I mean, the accents tell you where they should be, but I sometimes sort of filter out the accents, and I just want to think, this is how it's pronounced.
Do you ever slow down and read them out loud to yourself for fun? Because
for fun?
I do.
No. No, not for fun. But I do when I realize in the course of, oh, I'm going to be playing a game and this character has a particular name, or I have to reference a certain concept, or I want to throw in some phrase because I think it's interesting and flavorful, then I will do it. But I don't generally do it for fun. That it's usually for a practical purpose.
I think facility and pronunciation of really long words and phrases would be a pretty good party trick.
Yes.
At a con. So maybe I'll put that somewhere on my docket.
Okay. Now, all of that having been said, though, if there was one secret that I would pass along to anyone who wants to play Tecamel, is you don't need to use the words if you don't want to.
That's right.
I mean, yeah, there are some names that you will want to learn, but they're names just like in any other language, like learning to read Japanese or you know, speak Japanese, really, not even read it, but speak Japanese or French or, you know. And the thing about that is that if you want to say, for example, tekumel, okay, the stress is on the first D, it's marked. And it's the one that, in fact, actually, even players in Professor Barker's game would tend to slightly mispronounce. We would end up saying tekumel. Okay, and that E, tekumel, is actually closer to what the Sulyani would actually would say, right? But you know what? It doesn't matter. It's your game. You can say the words. And if you come across somebody who's a better speaker of it, great, you can learn from them. But otherwise, you know what? The Sulyani grammar police, just like your English teacher, are not going to come home and whack you with a ruler if you've said it wrong.
Yeah.
Wow, what kind of impression of English teachers do you have?
Ones that lurk in the minds of people who don't want to learn languages, I'm just saying.
Fair enough.
No, that's absolutely true. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that's absolutely true, Victor. Because when I first started playing in Tecamel, back in the 90s, I guess it was, I didn't know the proper pronunciations of many things, but then neither did my players. So all that was needed truly was a willingness to use the words in a semi-consistent fashion so that people knew to what I was referring. And as I learned more, as I met people whose Sulyani pronunciations were more correct, I emulated those. I mean, but it was never a problem when I was a complete neophyte that I was saying, you know, the name of a character incorrectly by putting the stress somewhere else or not getting the intonation proper or whatever. No one cared as long as they knew, oh, you mean that guy, right, or that thing. And that was all that was needed, truly.
Yes, if the emphasis is on the wrong syllable, it's okay.
But in the course of playing, whether you said, you know, Vichune or Vichune made no difference. As long as people knew, oh, that guy, that's who you're referring to.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that having been said, I mean, this is really kind of a way of saying you're giving permission to people. It's like, you know what? Go ahead, play the game, say the words, learn the language as you want or not, and that's okay, because the world is what it is. And yeah, I think actually maybe even people are sort of thinking that the shade of Professor Barker would rise up and you know, want to correct their Sulyani. And
that'd be awesome.
Well, you know, there is that, I suppose. You know,
I would love that if that really happened.
Yeah. But I also think that there is a lot of desire out there to know how words are said. And I'd like to come back to that. I mean, I think that one of the ways in which the language can be used to bring in things into the game, you know, very easily, You know, and these are ways in which Professor Barker himself would impart a sense of the world in really very simple, straightforward ways that brought the world alive to people. So these are simple things like, for example, referring to dna grain bread, right? D-N-A. Dna is the grain that is grown by the Salyani. It's, you know, bright red in color, and it's forms the staple of their diet, right? Okay. And say, yes, you know, you the vendor in the marketplace gives you some fried fish that are wrapped in a dna grain flatbread. It's like, oh, okay, is that how that is? Okay, you know. And he would do that from time to time using words like that, or thesun gauze. You know, thesun is this very thin, gauzy-like fabric that is woven. And I think it's to harken back to the very thin linens of ancient Egypt and silks of China, that sense of an airy, filmy sort of fabric that both reveals and clothes, right? And so, yeah, if you can identify certain words like that, and in fact, Professor Barker does this in The Man of Gold and other of the novels, you can use that as a way to bring that into the game without really an awful lot of effort, but really, as I said, I think brings the game alive, brings the world into the game.
I completely agree with this. There is, in Solyanu and other places, a kind of easy sensuality that exists amongst the people within the culture. And I think from a player's perspective, allowing the language to move, you know, through your mind and out your mouth somehow, and speaking the stuff aloud, it creates or channels some of that sensuality into our dimension. That's my experience with the words, especially longer ones. Mm. There's something about the sound of the language and the way that it feels in the body when you use the words. And I wish I knew more stuff just to be able to rattle off and amaze everyone. But but, you know, when I'm looking at the text or reading things in the book, it feels like some kind of window or portal into the world, like the language is serving as
a
vehicle for transport.
Absolutely. That's definitely true. I mean, I know that it is always, as someone who's running Empire of the Pale Throne campaigns, I find it really enjoyable when players begin to use the words, because it helps me too, because it sort of helps to sort of ground the reality of what you're doing, you know, where you are. This is not, you know, medieval Europe or whatever. It's a different culture. And so when you meet some nobleman and he's referred to as the Hehelkoi, for example, that makes a difference than as he's just, you know, count so-and-so. I mean, you can go ahead and do that. There's nothing wrong with that. And sometimes people do until they get accustomed to being able to pronounce the word. But when you hear that, I find it very transporting.
Hmm. I'd like to learn more about the dialects of various regions, because that's mentioned in the source material pretty often. It'd be fun to get a leg up on being able to do that and kind of transport those accents into English in-game, but also with the appropriate words, be able to pull it off.
The easiest example to show that off is that there is a general Western and Eastern divide in the pronunciation of certain letters in Solyani. And one example of that, and forgive me, I've forgotten which side of the empire pronounces it which way, but one side of the empire pronounces the capital, the name of the capital, as Beisi. Si, that's an umlauted U, E, right? Beisi. And the other side of the empire will pronounce it as Beisi. Si. It's it's much more of an E sound, the sort of Y as I vowel sound. And, you know, I mean, this, we're waxing pedantic at this point. I mean,
sure.
You know.
But I don't think it's pedantic at all. I think it's really important. This cropped up once already in our show. Like, well, let's talk about the way it's presented in the text. In the original game, Hri'i or Hru'u is H-R-Y apostrophe Y. And then in later sources, it's H-R umlauted U apostrophe umlauted U. So, I mean, what you're describing with this East and West pronunciation is also mirrored in the text mm-hmm. itself.
And that is a way of the, you know, the notation in using Latin letters is part of, I think that's one of the places where people's eyes occasionally bounce off the page. How do I say Y apostrophe Y, right? You know, and there's actually some fairly simple rules for pronouncing Sulyani. One of them is that every letter is pronounced.
Yes.
Okay. So, like, for example, Baron Ald, right? That amazing, remarkable, perhaps even traitorous leader of Yon Kor. Baron Ald was once involved with Lady Yelrana, okay, of Yon Kor. And after the death of Lady Yelrana, Baron Ald is taken up with Lady Mimir, okay? And Lady Mimir's name is M-M-I-R, as we would spell it using Latin letters, right? Okay, and the idea being very simple, you know, those M's get pronounced, right? It's, and I'm probably putting almost too much of a glottal stop in between there. But yeah, it's Lady Mimir. That's all. That's all you have to know. You know, there you go. R's tend to be rolled, you know, as in perro, right? So, you know, Lady Mimir, and that's her name. And then using the accent mark as your stress indicator, you look at a word like, say, for example, the Hokun, the crystalloid alien race. You know, the accent's over the U, so you don't say Hokun, you say Hokun. And it's a way of sort of training yourself to actually look at a word and sound it out. And I have to tell you, that's what Professor Barker did with all of us. Is just, you know, he'd say, just sound it out. You know, say what's in front of you. And that would be a place to start.
Speaking of sounding it out, here's one that has surprised me as a result of recording this show. And that is, in my own mind's ear, I would say Vimuhla.
Vimuhla. You were so close.
But I'm hearing people do like a catch in the throat with the end of it and going Vimuhla.
Yes.
Vimuhla. Yeah. And I'm wondering, maybe that's in the pronunciation guide and I just missed it.
Yeah, it's the HL sound. And actually, the way in which some speakers of English will pronounce it, they'll just miss that entirely. They'll use the M-U-H, they'll read it as Vimula, right? Thinking that the H is modifying the U rather than being part of HLA. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the emphasis is Vimukla.
So get this. Back in, I guess, 83, when I first encountered Tecamel at Purdue, the going pronunciation of Vimukla there was Vimula. Yep. So I'm feeling like that is not correct.
Know, well, it isn't correct. But I mean, again,
but it is for them.
It is.
You
but
know?
The point is, yeah. You really shouldn't get hung up over that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only if there is someone, as we've been blessed, like for example, in having Victor, who knows these things, who can say, well, actually, it's pronounced like this. Vimukla is a good example because yeah. I used to say Vimukla. And then I used to hear Victor say it correctly, but over the phone and perhaps because of inattention, I heard a kind of a K sound, yep. The mukla. And then he corrected me on that. And it's still hard to do. That kh sound is hard without making it too strong, right? That it becomes a kh sound. You don't want that. But point remains, he said, well, this is the way it's supposed to be pronounced. If I don't, and I often sometimes will mispronounce it, that's not the end of the world. No one cares. You know what we're talking about. It's all right.
I like detail.
I do too.
Me personally, sure, I was pronouncing Sindarin before I encountered Tekemel, mm-hmm. in the same kind of perhaps.
And there's nothing
pedantic,
wrong. There,
but
no,
I choose to say detail oriented.
There's nothing
sort of
wrong
way.
With that. Certainly not. I mean, I never shy away from someone correcting me in my pronunciation, saying, "Well, actually, it's like this." My own. Weaknesses, if you will, or flaws in pronunciation, I'm not always as attentive to certain words as I ought to be, I know, but I don't mind. I mean, I would rather be correct if possible, but I think I just don't want people to feel as if, you know, getting it 100% accurate the first time out and every time is essential to playing
God, no.
and take them out.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a thing that people do. It's a psychological mechanism. I find it all over human consciousness. It's like this need to have something right or correct before you can do it. And like driving. Well, I don't know how to drive, so I can't do it. That prevents one from driving, for example. So it seems like at some point you just have to jump in and do something instead of worrying about
Absolutely,
if you're going
definitely.
To do it right.
Oh, sure. Definitely. No question at all about that. I mean, Tekemel is full of a lot of words that are unfamiliar, unusual, and will undoubtedly be very difficult for English speakers to get the first time or even the dozenth time correctly. But keep using them and trying. And again, as I said, as long as people know what you're talking about, I don't see any problem with doing that. That's the way you learn.
Yep.
I think the same people who like to learn Klingon and Elvish would like Tsolyani and all the associated languages.
Well, I did a podcast with the Constructed Languages group here in Madison about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago now. And that was fascinating. They, the linguists and people interested in languages whose primary focus was on constructing new languages. And they were immensely fascinated by Tsolyani and the other languages of Tekemel. And in fact, actually, that was where one of the comments that James made earlier cropped up, was that by the standards of constructed languages, Tsolyani is actually relatively simple. You know, simple, relatively regular. I've had at least one person interested in constructed languages sort of sniff that it just wasn't that interesting. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Fine.
Move along. nothing to see here.
But at the same time, you know, I think it's interesting for those people who want to play with language, Tsolyani is, I think, a wonderful playground. And one of the things that I want to encourage people to do, if they haven't already done so, is to pick up a copy of the Tsolyani language. It's available on DriveThru. But not just to pick it up. There's a section in the back of one of the volumes.
Yes, I know.
that is essentially a phrasebook for the recent visitor to Tsolyanu.
Yes.
And it is illustrative, and it's humorous, you know. we are approaching the Sock Bay Road Tower. The Sock Bay Road Captain will want to see our papers. Can he be bribed? Yes, give him 50 kytars and he will let us pass. You know.
Yeah.
And it's not just for reading the sort of dialogues in English. It's also a case, I mean, it's this great opportunity to, okay, wait a second, what is that in Soyani? And then you get to sort of piece it out. It turns into a puzzle game. And I found it to be a lot of fun. But again, like I said, I'm not a, how would I put it? I'm not a typical person to this. So, James, you were noting that you seem to have, you've run into this yourself.
Did I?
Well, you were saying you'd mentioned that you'd looked at it.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you meant. Yes, absolutely. I love it just because I find it humorous. Like some of the phrases that are included in it are, I guess, they are illustrative. They do give you insights into, you know, what Soyani culture is like and so forth from doing it. But I was just actually trying to remember some of the ones that, you know, talk about things that I thought were aspects of Soyani that you otherwise wouldn't think about, but they're sort of presented in this way. But I guess what you just said about, you know, the Sakha Road captain and the bribe and so forth, that does that. I'm just sort of scanning through them now because I was hoping to find some particularly amusing or useful sort of a phrase, but oh well, I can't seem to find one. It suits at the moment.
Yeah, it should be noted that 50 kaitars is not necessarily a standard bribe that is only used for illustrative purposes, and may vary from place to place in whatever part of the empire that you were in. So.
Absolutely, sure.
Actually, there are some interesting examples in the phrasebook of things like, for example, how do you say that you're hurt? You know, my friend is hurt. I am hurt. You know, call the city guard. You know, there are some examples of that. There's also what to say at a party. You know, you've ended up at some sort of party and banquet. What, you know, what sort of idle conversation does that look like?
Yes. Yes. That's right. That's right.
I'm going to use these in this thing that I'm going to run shortly, and have them ready to go. But say them in Soljani and say, this is what you hear.
Oh, good luck.
Good luck.
I'll be especially I will be especially impressed if you can do the ones that include all the superlatives and other comparative adjectives, because I find those particularly difficult.
Well, I might rank them in order of difficulty.
Well,
and go for the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, there's the clear example of that is the Soyani you. Which you do you use? You know, when you're speaking to someone.
Yes.
I have met you, right? And the form tusmi is the sort of root. But tusmikelan is one. And in fact, my Soyani is leaving me. I can't even remember which one that is. So James, you'll have to look it up. But if you're going to end up speaking to, say, for example, an imperial prince, oh no, nothing so short as tusmi.
No,
tokun yes. Tusmi dali dalisa is, I think, close. If you know, which is the you of odd splendor, if I recall correctly.
That sounds better when you're groveling
on
the ground too.
Yeah.
It echoes nicely against the cobblestone.
Of course, and that is of course the posture from which you would want to say that, right? Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny those sorts of social things that players sometimes are taken aback by the idea that no, this is a society where social status is sufficiently stratified that your physical behavior needs to mirror that. It that is one of those ways in which I think Americans are sometimes thrown, you know, by encountering Tekumel, is these social customs that actually are supposed to matter, right?
Yes.
And you know, and some of them, you know, within game, you know, you find yourself over time taking on certain attitudes. Like, for example, Sulianni think nothing of eating in front of one another, right? But you're only supposed to be eating and conversing with people of your own social status or relatively nearby, right? Which they indicate by how many mats everyone is sitting on. You know, the person who has the most status has the most mats, and the person with least status has the least, right? But that wouldn't occur to the Liviani, who consider eating to be vaguely obscene, and so consume all of their food behind these if they're rich enough, to these sort of tessellated grillwork dividers, which the Sulianni find to be almost as incomprehensible as I think Americans do. It's kind of like, you do...
I'm fascinated by the Liviani. Yeah, I always have been.
You do that? yes, of course. We expect you to do that too.
It's almost like the forms of you model the social stratus.
Yes.
It's neat how the language and the culture would be interdependent.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the other ways, frankly, in which the language is useful in role-playing game. Even if you're not literally going to be addressing people by the appropriate you pronoun, the form of you, it is helpful, I think, and very, very insightful to sort of get a sense of, oh, they consider, you know, not merely people of higher status and within their social structure to mean something, but also, you know, it's sort of, you know, you're a noble foreigner, or you're a person whose status is, we don't actually know. Well, as your place in life, you know, you're a pious priest or a great general or whatever. All of these things have distinct pronouns associated with them. So that gives you some insight into what the Sulianni value, what they consider to be important enough to that their language reflects that. So even, as I say, I don't expect in the course of play that someone is going to use all the various forms of you, mostly because I wouldn't recognize them if they pronounced them.
Expect the unexpected.
But that being said, if someone were to say, and I think it would be wonderful if they did, in the course of play, that they address someone, you know, with the you of heart's desire or whatever, that gives some indication as to how your character feels about the person whom they're addressing. And that's helpful, and that's useful, right? I like that. Or when you speak to an imperial prince or the governor of the city or whatever, depending on what form of the pronoun you use. Because it also could, you know, if you slide down, it could portray contempt for someone that you're not giving them their appropriate due, and so forth.
Yeah,
where's this located? I know I've seen it in print.
It's in the Sulianni language.
Yeah, it's in the Sulianni language. It's in the first volume.
Is that the only place it is? Because I know that I've seen it, and I only recently got that PDF.
It shows up also a little bit in Man of Gold.
Okay, maybe it's in the back of Man of Gold.
It's in the text. It actually shows up relatively early on. Yes, here we go. In the Daw edition, it's on page 18. And this is when Harsan is encountering the messenger that's been sent to... talk to him, Kurune. And, the messenger paced slowly around the construction, looking, feeling, touching, gently rubbing. The smooth warmth of the amber and the russet yellow highlights of the dark gold seemed to fascinate him. He paused finally before the two priests. This was no unlettered bearer of messages. Harsan ventured, "My lord, you comprehend?" The other gave him a slight smile. "Who I am concerns you not. What you have made here does concern me. You may address me as Tusmiketlan, the you of polite anonymity. In return, I shall call you Tusmingaru, the you of honorable youth. Let me look upon the creator of this work."
Yes.
Yeah, I'm snapping my fingers in admiration.
And that comes up actually through all of Professor Barker's novels. There are times when it's commented upon parenthetically about which form of address is used.
I just liked hearing you read it. That was great.
It is fun to do. And in fact, that would be a really good way for people to get into this is, yeah, read it aloud. There's nothing wrong with that. I think we're sometimes disciplined again. You know, I think people have just sort of nightmares of, elementary school English and grammar classes, read to yourself. What's wrong with you? It's like, no, read aloud. That's how this stuff comes alive.
That's how literature has come alive for the majority of its existence.
Yes. Yeah. Wait.
Speaking of language and things read aloud, this is, I guess, a related topic. There are all sorts of epics and whatnot mentioned in the text.
Ah, mm-hmm.
That are read aloud, or not read aloud, but recited mm-hmm. aloud by masters of these sorts of things. The names of those always fascinate me.
The Lament to the Wheel of Black. Yes.
Exactly.
The epic of, the Epic of Hrugga.
Pronounce both those G's separately.
Oh, yeah.
Hrugga.
Well, Hrugga. No, but that's another example. I mean, speak about being
detail-oriented,
but you do need to pronounce each of those separately.
Detail counts.
It does. Well, Hrugga sounds more interesting than Hrugga, right?
Hrugga sounds like a hero.
He sounds heroic. He sounds noble, right? But Hrugga, it's sort of like, what's that? Who is that? It's like some kind of a beast.
He bakes my Dinah grain bread.
Exactly.
Anyway. No, that fellow's name is Kagesh. We don't even mention him here.
Yes.
Oh, yes, Kagesh.
That's Soliani John.
Yeah. John, George, something. Yeah, exactly. Most common name. And actually, this sort of occurs to me. One of the things that we could do is, as we go along, we might pick a set of words just to, our Soliani moment for the podcast, right? And read them off and talk a little bit about them. Maybe that we could
sure.
do that.
I think that's a great idea. Just to make a little, like a 5-minute segment or whatever.
Yeah. Your Soliani lesson for the day. Here are the names of the gods, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and if we could call the Soliani lesson of the day something suitably Soliani, like the infinite moment of resplendent edification.
Oh my goodness. I can see that you have learned in a school for noble folk and have been tutored by those of high and very high status.
I am surprised that you have to make this observation. And I'm using the U of, I don't have the 34 in front of me, but it's the one that means I can't believe you didn't already know that about me.
Tusmichan is a U of endearment, but there's one that's in there that is the something to the effect of the U of gentle condescension or something.
Yes,
like that.
That's right. That's
oh,
right.
I love that.
That's right. There is
gentle
one.
Condescension.
Yeah, the you use it with someone who is stepping above their status.
Nice.
Oh, he's doing that again. Right. Well, you're a very interesting fellow. Right. There you go. And go from there. And the thing about it is that I can just hear people saying back, but who cares? This is a game. Why should it matter? And I think that part of the fun of playing Tecamel is in understanding these social nuances. I think that's probably where some of this resistance comes from, is that people coming from D&D, where there is no baked-in social status, no social structure, except whatever is brought in from whatever world is being played in. When they, D&D players coming to Tecamel, coming to Empire of the Petal Throne, are thrown by the, I mean, thrown. They are discomfited by the idea that, wait a second, we have to pay attention to who someone is. Either they're lords and kings and they're above us, or they're peasants and they're below us. But, what more difference can it make? And I think actually that's where you turn around and say, but this is what makes this world interesting, is that by paying attention to those things, you experience the world more richly, more fully, and that's what makes it worth doing. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So
all these things have affected the way I interact in like our mm-hmm. Earth world.
Oh, really?
Being aware, yeah, absolutely. Like the way status and the subtleties of relationships between people, like everything that you read at a formative age impacts your adult life in profound and subtle ways. And Tekemel is like near the top of the list with regard to the kinds of things that I personally have found useful over time. I don't know, maybe it's like being so young and being encouraged to read really long words in a foreign language. That's been a useful intellectual skill to have as an adult in the professional world.
Well, it is it is actually the case, and I can say this, a college instructor, we know pedagogically that people who learn two languages are at an advantage in compared to people who know only one language.
Right, an advantage, like, socially, because they can perceive that the world is larger than, you know, a monoculture?
More so that probably, says the sociologist, but it's a, they do better on tests, they pick up concepts more easily, pedagogically they tend to get better grades. Learning a second language does a lot for showing how the world works and looks through different eyes. I mean, and this is part of the work of, you know, Sapir and Whorf, and, you know, while we don't directly credit the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis anymore, that language determines thought, it is certainly the case that language and thought are deeply interrelated, and that how one says something has, and in what language, shapes how they view things. I mean, there was an interesting study that was done on this with languages in Europe, that most of the languages in Europe, with the exception of, say, for example, Hungarian, are gendered. They're very gendered languages, Spanish, German, so on and so forth, French. And what they did was they looked at how objects were gendered in this study, and in particular looked at how there were differences between languages in how something was gendered. Like, I'm drawing this completely at random, I don't know if it's actually the case, but like, for example, a bridge might be, you know, to say this is a bridge, okay, now in English we don't gender that, a bridge is a bridge, right? But in German or French or Spanish or another language, you know, a bridge may very well have a specific gendered connotation. And what they were looking at in the study was how did people's descriptions of objects change depending on the gender and across languages. And they found that there was variation based on the gendered nature of the object. Okay, so
variation that was consistent across the culture so as to suggest that this gendering of objects is somewhat independent of the culture itself, and it's just a thing that
For example, if something was gendered as being masculine, then it would tend to be described as being, you know, strong and sturdy and upright and powerful. You know, if that, I'm
virile.
Yeah, virile. There you go. Whereas if the same thing was gendered in a feminine way in another culture, it would be described as graceful and elegant and having a certain beauty to it, right? That our gendering of objects actually shapes our perceptions of what they are. And that happens even in English, for example, when you look at things, for example, like ships. You know, ships are mm-hmm. consistently gendered as feminine, right? And not too surprisingly, in an overdone trope in something like Star Trek, you have the captain of the ship is very obviously masculine, and the ship is very obviously feminine, and, you know, Captain Kirk is really married to the Enterprise.
So how did the Tsolyani gender things? This isn't something that's at the tip of my mind.
Well,
I know the word, like, proper, not proper nouns, but even proper nouns, names of people, they are gendered. So like an A would be often feminine, or a U would be masculine.
That's not always the case, but that's the same. Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Actually, in Tsolyani, there is an interesting confluence of things, which I find utterly fascinating, in that to gender something as feminine involves adding a suffix to it, the suffix ra. Okay?
Right.
You know, so suffix ra. So if you were to say, for example, James's example from earlier, the Hehelokoi, the count. Now, that's by implication, since there is no suffix there, you were saying implicitly the masculine count, the male count.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you were to say Hehelorakoi, and the stress may be wrong, I might have to go back, Hehelorakoi, that would mean, it is the countess.
Where do you put the RA? Does that vary from word to word?
It usually happens after the root morpheme and before any ending suffix.
Yeah, because the koi ending is another thing. That's a noble ending.
Right. And if you were to say, hehelorakoi is to say the noble countess. Okay, which is to say this is a person who is a feminine noble, a feminine person of status, who is considered to be of nobility and should be respected as such. That's all implicit in the word itself.
Because, Tsolyani has, in addition to the genders, it has the noble and ignoble endings as well.
Right. And that's the thing about it is that ignobility is also denoted by that RA. So, one of the criticisms that could be leveled at Tsolyani is that it is, in its own way, a somewhat sexist language, but no more so than, say, languages that exist here on Earth. And the thing about it is that it's interesting to see how that plays out, because notice I said Hehelorakoi. The Hehelorakoi is to suggest that this is a feminine person, not an ignoble person, and the nobility is implied by the koi that's put in on the end.
I think that this particular discussion has opened a door maybe to something we would like to talk about in the future, and that is how the society, the Tsolyani society, is mirrored in the language and vice versa.
Oh yeah, that would be great to talk about.
Specifically with regard to gender, for example, because Aradani women are considered the equals of men, but a non-Aradani woman is not. And this is reflected in the language with where you put the RA. In a way, it's like the default is masculine unless you say it isn't.
That's right.
And that's the same thing as the gender role for women. So doubtless there are other examples of this that we can find that would be interesting. Not at this moment necessarily, but
yeah.
I think that if one looks, I think these sorts of things are going to be embedded very deeply in the structure of the world and the language.
Very much so. We should pick this up on a future podcast. Though
that would be a good idea.
Well, that sounds like a plan. I think we're good for today. What do you guys think?
I think so as well.
I think so too.
This is
a
lot to take in.
On that note, cut!
Thank you for listening to the Hall of Blue Illumination. You can email us your questions, queries, and other topics at citizen@techmlpodcast.com. You can also find TechMO Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Until next time, take care and have fun playing in the world of TechMO.